Hey, this is Andrew Bernarski, Leatherface from the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Remember, words of advice, don't go out there. Hope things are kick ass, and maybe I'll see you at some good horror conventions coming up. Rock on.
The film which you are about to see is an account of the tragedy which befell a group of five youths. It is all the more tragic in that they were young. But had they lived very, very long lives, they could not have expected, nor would they have wished to see, as much of the mad and macabre as they were to see that day. This is the only known image of Thomas Hewitt, the man they call Leatherface. The case today still remains open.
In a world where zombies, ghosts, serial killers, and vampires all exist, it's Nico, Brian, and Mike, and they are all that stand between you and the films that could end the world. Welcome to the Don't Go Out There Horror Movie Podcast.
Welcome back to the Don't Go Out There Horror Movie Review Podcast. We want to say, first of all, thank you for all of our listeners. And tonight, we're coming more modern, I would say. Yes. And tonight, we're going to be reviewing the 2003 remake of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. This, to me, guys, I'm not going to get too in-depth because I don't want to spoil nothing, but this is a really, really good remake, reboot. I'm not going to get too deep into it. But let's just talk about our basic thoughts on the Texas Chainsaw Massacre real quick. Me, personally, not real familiar with the whole franchise as a whole. I've seen the original once, and I've seen Texas Chainsaw 3D. Me and my girlfriend at the time went and seen it in theaters. And I've seen the 2003 remake, which we're reviewing tonight, and the 2006 prequel. I've seen both of those several times and owned them. And I think those two are great movies. I think Leatherface is a cool slasher, cool villain. I like the story. And I think the chainsaw would be the weapon I would be the most afraid of if they were coming after me.
With. Right.
Just hearing that ying, and I'm running, guys. But yeah, I'm not as familiar with this franchise as the others we've talked about, but the movies I listed, I do like for the most part. Brian, what about you? What are your thoughts on this franchise?
I'm kind of the same way. The Texas Chainsaw Massacre was never, quote unquote, my franchise. You know, I watched the original years and years ago. I honestly couldn't even tell you. I need to go back and revisit that, actually, you know, since I've been older, and I'm sure we will on this podcast eventually anyway. But this was actually my introduction back in 2003 at the theater. Was my introduction to the whole franchise. I mean, I knew who it was and all that. I just never really got into the the Leatherface slasher. I don't know, and maybe honestly because maybe it bothered me a little bit, because I'll tell you later in this movie actually really, really unnerved me, to be honest with you. So
yeah, I think every horror movie that starts off with those words "based on a true story" or "inspired by a true story" always kind of make you feel a little some type of way, a little extra than just regular slash movies. Mike, what about you and the Texas Chainsaw Massacre?
Well, a couple things. One, and we'll get into it, this movie can still get me a little bit, and I've watched it 30 times, man, at least, and this movie can still get me to kind of go, ooh, a little bit here and there. And another thing, as far as the franchise goes, I've seen them all. Some are really good, like the first one, like the second one, like this one. The beginning I really enjoy. There's some really bad ones, like The Next Generation with Matthew McConaughey. It's awful. and 3D, which I thought was a dumpster fire, to be nice. I like the character of Leatherface. My issue with the character itself is the inconsistency of that character itself. Like, you don't ever get the same Leatherface from the first one in any of these, except for this one that we're about to review, and you get a little bit of this version of him in the beginning, and it's even more gory, which we'll touch on in a little bit. But yeah, man, I like the franchise overall. I think Leatherface is a cool ass villain. As far as, I mean, who the hell is not scared of somebody running around with a chainsaw? I don't think there's anything about that. That is, well, except for Texas Chainsaw Part 2. We'll get into that another time. But other than that, man, this is freaking scary, and they do a great job with him in this one, which is why I'm excited to review it.
Oh, I agree. I think Leatherface, the whole Hewitt family in this movie is awesome.
And that's another thing, real quick, before you start. This is the first movie that gives us the Hewitt family and the original and the rest. Any movie tied in with the original is the Sawyers.
Yeah.
In this movie, they changed up the name, which I actually like because, again, to me, this is a reboot, not a remake. There's some nods to the original. The plot is close enough, but there's definitely some big differences between this one and Tobe Hooper's classic. So, I mean, to me, it was just a way to reboot and kickstart the franchise. And I actually think this is the first movie that got us away from those Scream, Know What You Did Last Summer, Final Destination type teen slashers, brought us into a new genre, which is not, this isn't quite torture porn, but this is, you start to see shades of Saw, shades of Hostel in this movie. It's very, very, very gory, very gritty, very real. And I think this movie kind of kickstarted that.
Well, like you said about the beginning, that's that movie was after the Hostels and the Saws of the
right.
world,
you
which is
tell.
Why it was so much more gory right. in that movie. You're exactly right about that. But y'all ready to jump into the review?
Yeah, let's do it.
This is gonna be a fun movie to talk about because I'm not gonna spoil it, but
by the way, I
ranked it pretty high.
Yeah, me as well. And by the way, Platinum Dunes is. They did this one. They did Nightmare. They did Friday. They did a lot of those horror remakes, horror reboots. And so this is their best one. That's all. Well, it's a tie.
It's the best one. Oh. But two out of three are good and one's horrible.
Yeah, we touched on that last week too. Yeah, but they do a couple more that I'm missing a blank on. But yeah, this is pretty close up there, yeah.
Well, and two of three, you know, I assume you're talking about the Jason one being
right.
Being good. The same director. So there's a Marcus Nispel did this one.
Oh, that's right. And you could tell he got his start in music videos.
Yeah.
By the way, he's just lighting, right. by the way he uses the camera. So, no, it's really good. Anyway, sorry, Nico. Go ahead.
No, you're good. So the date is August 20th, 1973. The film starts – I didn't write down really none of the commentary, but the film starts with just archival recordings, archival crime scene footage and photography. It's just pretty much introing – based on a true story, introing us into the heinous acts, I think is what they called it, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So I'm just going to transition us to our five – I don't think they're teens, but our five
– Young adults.
Young adults of the film. We've got Kemper – which is Aaron. Kemper and Aaron are a couple. Aaron is Jessica Biel. She's going to be our final girl.
Woo-hoo.
We have Andy. We have Pepper, a girl they just picked up the day before, I believe.
We got some thoughts about Pepper.
Yeah. And we got a girl named Morgan, or a girl, excuse me. Their other friend, Morgan. He's curly hair, glasses, kind of the pothead nerd guy, I guess you could go with. That's what I'm calling him.
Right.
But these guys, they're all traveling across the state of Texas. They just left Mexico, and they're heading to a Lynyrd Skynyrd concert. And, you know, Andy and Pepper, you know, they're feeling each other. They're making out a lot. Morgan's watching them. Aaron and Kemper, they're up front singing. She's talking to Kemper saying, when are we going to get married? You know, they're obviously in love, ready to get married. You know, they're just cruising along the side of the road. And a little, I guess it's really not that important, but they bring up going to Mexico to get marijuana. And it's discovered, I guess, Morgan got like two pounds of it in a pinata or whatever. It's not really that important. But as they're driving along in this van, they see this girl just walking along the side of the road. And it's not your average person just walking on the side of the street. This girl she's out of it. Like
seen
mentally.
Some shit, been through shit.
I've seen some things, man. You know, yeah. like a Vietnam veteran or something.
Right.
And you know, they pull over to see her. You know, at first they're yelling at her like, "What the hell are you doing in the middle of the road?" Then they walk up to her and they see her you know, talking to herself. She's panicky. She's freaking out. She's clearly a disturbed woman. What are your guys' quick thoughts on just this part before they actually pick her up? Anything? Go ahead, Brian.
Well, I'll say a few things too. The narration, that creepy narration at the very beginning, was actually I looked up. It was actually John Larroquette that provided that voice from Night Court fame and all that stuff. He's actually also did the original narration too. They brought him back for that too. Also during that scene you're talking about at the very beginning, in the car, Jessica Biel's character Aaron's offered some weed and she throws it outside and doesn't take it. Apparently though, there was a deleted scene that had that they were going to play off of, that she was actually pregnant. And they were going to, kind of expose that towards the end, but that never played out. But anyway, that kind of, once you know that, and then you go back and watch that scene, well, you know, that makes a lot more sense.
So I have a VHS of this lying around. I say I don't own it. I do own it, but I have a VHS of it, so I can't really watch it. It's just sitting here collecting dust. But it's an extended cut, and the pregnant scene is in that cut.
Oh,
and
wow.
So when you watch it without, it's weird because her not accepting the weed or whatever just kind of makes her look like a prick. And
right.
So when you watch the extended cut, you're like, oh yeah, she's not a prick. She was doing it for the right reasons. And I think that it was only a couple of minutes. I would have left that in, but whatever. But yeah, also returning from the original, you mentioned the narration, the cinematographer is Daniel Pearl. It's the same cinematographer from the Tobe Hooper original Chainsaw movie. And so that's kind of cool. I mean, he said he would never make the movie. Director calls him, asks him, says yes without hesitation, hangs up the phone and says, oh, shit, I said I wouldn't do this movie. And he just liked the director so much that he decided to go ahead and do it. So that's kind of cool, too, to have two ties to the original work on the film.
And the cinematography is just
it's fantastic
in this
it's
movie.
So
it is
good.
It's unprecedented. It's amazing for sure.
There's a ton of beautiful shots, especially of the house later on.
The house is awesome.
Well, after you know, Aaron and Pepper, they're talking to this girl. They convince her to just, you know, get in the van with us. We'll take you wherever you got to go. And they start driving. And I kind of got a little bit of a nitpick with this scene, but I'll bring it up in a minute. So they're driving in the van. And, you know, she's just mumbling to herself, talking. She's like, you're going the wrong way. And, you know, there's a bad man there. And she's like panicking. She's freaking out. She's screaming. And I'll go into how the actual death later, because I watched the Dead Meat kill count, and he actually explained how they did this kill. And after he explained it, this makes this kill awesome, the way they done it.
So awesome.
But you know, this girl is traumatized. She is not wanting to go back to this wherever they're going. So she pulls a gun out of her. It's by her crotch area. I don't want to be, you know, disgusting with it, but it's right in her crotch area, in her dress, and she shoots herself through the mouth, through the back of her head, and, you know, they slam, you know, all the teens are young adults. They're all freaking out like anybody would who's seen somebody committing suicide. Right. And the only nitpick I really have with it is they're saying they're going the wrong way, but her ass was walking that way too.
Come on, I have an even smaller nitpick with this. Okay,
but this scene is very good. Before we jump into our nitpicks or anything, the scene is really good, and the kill, which I'll explain later, is awesome. The way that they describe it. Go ahead, Mike, with your nitpick.
My smaller nitpick than yours, and that's actually kind of a good nitpick. If I'm not yours is better than mine. However, she hit the gun in her crotch, but earlier in the scene, you see her leap up. Mm-hmm. And the gun does not fall out of her So I don't know where that gun came from. I can put some thoughts together. But man, that's something else. No, but that's just like a really tiny nitpick. I laugh every time I notice it now. I'm like, damn it. It doesn't take me out of the scene because, like you said, the kill is awesome. The way they didn't CGI this kill. They used practical effects. I'll let you explain it. But it's awesome. Like, it's not the best kill of the movie, but it is really damn good. It almost doesn't count as a kill a little bit because Leatherface didn't do it, but still.
Go ahead, Brian, with your thoughts on this scene real quick.
I agree with you wholeheartedly, and I'm very eager to hear how they really did this kill because I don't know. But the cinematography, just how it showed the kids in the van, them all screaming and then backed up, and you back up through the hole in her head and then back out the hole in the van, is just, it's amazing. And it's not something I have seen since then. I've not seen a shot like that in any horror movie since then, honestly.
Since we're already talking about it, I'll just go ahead and get into it now.
Yeah, let's do it.
The camera dollies through the hole that's shot into this head. Like Mike said, the whole effect is practical. They shoot, the actress shoots an air gun into her mouth, and someone else shoots a blood gun behind her, so you see the spray. The camera goes through a dummy that goes on a track, and the director said it took several shots for him to get it, but they said that they had to get it done. So that's just amazing to me how, because whenever she shoots herself, guys and girls, when it's not, you don't just see it from like the side or from behind. The camera actually, when she shoots through her mouth, the camera goes through the hole in her head, like the shot goes through it, and it is mind blowing to think how they've done that, and it's so awesome.
Especially practical.
It's all practical, no CGI, nothing, none of that fake stuff.
Hey, real quick sidebar. I had to get a picture of Brian listening to you do that, because he was all freaking in. He like, it's like his face kept moving closer. He's like, and yeah, no, I thought it was really cool how they shot that scene, man. I mean, that director really, really, really pushed. And I watched a documentary on the making of this movie and how they got into it and all that too. It prepped for the review, and he really pushed for, let's do this practically. It won't be the same if we do it CGI. And he's right. And they did use a dummy, but they did the dolly shot so well, you can't really tell. Like, you really, I didn't know they used a dummy until I watched that. Like, obviously they clearly did, but it never crossed my mind that it was a dummy. I thought they may have, like, you know, made up the back of her head to look like that. I'm sure that's possible, but really great job, man. Just a really cool, inventive, kind of the first time it had ever been done. So I think that's that alone makes this movie really memorable to me.
Yeah, I'll agree with what you said. It's not my favorite kill, but it's probably the best kill.
It's the best looking kill.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Best looking kill for sure. So after this girl kills herself, Kemper, he takes the pinata full of marijuana. He just throws it into the field. I guess he's just trying to get rid of evidence, because I'm sure they're going to have a cop check this van out. Yeah, so they're driving down the road, and they pull up to this old, rundown-looking gas station, and they walk inside, and now we're introduced to Luda Mae. She's the, I guess you call her the cashier or whatever she is there, and this gas station, y'all, is a dump. They've got all kind of weird animal carcasses for sale, and they got flies flying all over it. It's going to get shut down by the FDA if they ever looked at it. But, you know, they're not going there anytime soon.
I would hope not.
Then, you know, all of them are saying, hey, can we call the sheriff? You know, there's a girl who just committed suicide in our van. Luda Mae calls the sheriff, quotations. He says, he ain't going to be here for 2 hours. Can you take the body to the Crawford Mill? They're like, how many damn girls kill themselves in this town that the sheriff can't come make an exception? So that, to me, should be a real red flag, and they do take it, but Erin is pretty, she's pretty hard up to get this girl's body to the sheriff, because she doesn't want to just dump it. What are you guys' thoughts on this gas station scene?
Look, I mean, as soon as that girl kills herself, you know, from then on, the movie is just bam, bam, bam. Like, there's no more taking a break. It's just, it's intense. And you know, there's very few, maybe two or three movies in my entire life that I've ever watched that I've actually, like, for real, like, hey, that scared me. But this one, it didn't scare me, but it unnerves me, and it's so unnerving. And I think it's because it's so damn, I don't know where you guys live, but I think that you could drive probably 30 or 45 minutes from every city and come across a place like this. And it's, you know, and it's legit. I mean, I know for a fact you could drive, you know, a few, you know, half an hour north from where I live and run into a place like this. And it's like, I think that that's what makes this so unnerving. And and the fact that you can put yourself in a horror movie, and you may I do that. I'm less like, all right, well, what would I do in the situation type of thing? And the guys in this movie get fucked up quick, and you can't do anything. Like, I don't know if I was a guy in this movie that I would have done anything differently. And, you know, I probably would have been dead just like all three of them.
Yeah, man, I'm from Jasper, Florida, bro.
I'm from Polk County.
I'm from a tiny town. I feel you. This is definitely relatable. Go ahead, Mike.
Okay. So, you're right. And everything y'all have said is right. Here is where I love this movie. But here's some small issues I start to have with the character of Erin. They course correct. They make me a big fan of her later. But man, there are a lot of times in this movie where I am pissed that she is making all these decisions that you're like, no. And I know they're just and they're nice and they're, you know, brave and courageous. Noble. But man, screw her. We're leaving this girl's body right here and getting the heck up out of here. I'm not doing the, oh, we got to wait on the sheriff. Man, fuck that sheriff. Are you serious? Especially when you find out what the sheriff is, which.
Oh, yeah.
If you want to get into that, that's freaking.
Yeah, we'll have the final girl debate because me and you talked about it on the Twitter timeline earlier.
R. Lee Ermey, though. Let's get into a little R. Lee Ermey.
So after they leave this gas station, they end up deciding to go to this abandoned mill, the Crawford Mill. And this is like what Mike was just saying. All five of them start debating. All right, let's vote, guys. I want to just drop this body off. I want to leave. We didn't ask her. We didn't make her kill herself. Why are we stuck, you know, making sure this body gets somewhere? And Erin, this is what Mike's talking about. Erin says, would you just want somebody to drop your dead body off so your parents wouldn't know, blah, blah, blah? Which is noble, which is noble, which is honorable, which is maybe the right thing to do. But, you know, I'm kind of with Morgan. Just dump this bitch and let's leave.
and it might be different in the 70s, too. I mean, like, you could probably dump her and get away with it. But nowadays, it would be a thing where you'd be like, well, shit, they'd probably somehow trace it back to us. Like, we've got to explain this gigantic hole in the back of the van. You know, I could definitely see it wouldn't take much convincing to convince a group of five or six people to stay and wait for the cops, you know, which is not, you know, obviously the cops you think it is. But
right.
I mean, I could see that. It's not that bad of a nitpick to me, which is another reason probably why it bothers me so much, is because the stuff that happens is so realistic. Like, I think in a group of five or six people would probably happen.
Yeah, it would be hard driving around, you know, trying to explain this giant hole in the back covered in blood, you know. It'd be hard to, you know, pull over for some a bag of chips and some gas explaining that if you just dump it.
I have in my notes. Are you ready?
Yeah, go ahead.
Jessica Biel is hot. Dumb, but hot. And so there you go. She's not dumb the whole movie, though, just early on. That's all.
Then after Erin convinces them, hey, let's just wait for the sheriff to get here. We're not going to dump this body. It flashes to inside of this, barn, I guess you could call it. And you see something just run by real quick. And you don't know what it is. You don't know if it's Leatherface or what. So they go in. They start looking around. And they open this, this little door thing up. And all it has is it's just a possum in there. It's just kind of a false scare. It's nothing too major. But then they end up finding a little boy named Jedediah. And Jedediah asks them, what did they do to the little girl? And, you know, they explain, hey, she killed herself in our van. We didn't do it. It wasn't our fault. And I wrote down my notes. This was a good scene, but it had a lot of false scares in it to me. I think it was just false tension, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree. Yep. I actually really like the character of Jedediah, though, especially later. I mean, we can wait until those scenes get there, but I think he's not my favorite member of the family, as we'll call it. That would be the sheriff, but still really good character. And I don't have a whole lot more than, like you said, a lot of false scares, and they don't do it a lot in this movie. So I was like, there's a lot of really good false scares in this movie, but there's still a lot of them in this scene.
Yeah, I think I can't really think of any other false scares, but so you're right about that. Go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, I could get behind probably all of the decisions and see how you could follow Jessica Biel or Aaron into pretty much all of the other decisions. But this, to me, was an absolutely idiotic decision that she's just, there's something in there. I'm going to run in there and see what it is. So this was the first check mark for me personally that I was like, oh, yeah, that was stupid for her.
But, I mean, that's kind of typical. That's which is kind of weird because they went out of their way to not make this what I would call a slasher. They didn't market it like a slasher by putting the people on the poster. Right. But that's a very typical Final Girl slasher right there. Oh, let me go look at this. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, lady. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I wrote down after this little scene, Morgan wants to GTFO. He is ready to split.
He should have just left.
Yeah, he has had his fill, and he is ready to go. So Aaron and Kemper decide, let's just walk to this house. So they cut through the woods, and they knock on the door. This is a beautiful scene, by the way. Just the way it's shot is beautiful. The house scene, they have several of them, but the house scene, cinematography is beautiful right here. They knock on the door, and a guy in a wheelchair with two nubs for legs answers the door. This is Uncle Monty. They say, hey, we need to call the sheriff. We got this dead girl who killed herself at our van. We need to see the sheriff. So Uncle Monty only lets Aaron in, and Kemper has to wait outside.
Wonder why.
Yeah, they walk to the phone. Uncle Monty dials it for her. She talks to the sheriff, and he kind of wheels away from it. And this is where Uncle Monty starts getting into Uncle Freddy Krueger. He falls out of his wheelchair, in quotations, and he's running like a bloodbath. It looks like that water looked horrible.
It was just dirty, nasty, blech, water. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's laying on the ground. He's asking for help. She's trying to help him, but all he's doing is copping a bunch of feels on her butt. That's all he's doing. And Kemper's like, what is taking so long? So Kemper goes in. He starts looking around. He sees how creepy and weird this house is. All these, weird animal parts just laying around. Then he walks into this room where I don't know what cartoon it is playing, but it's kind of got some like really loud drum beats going. Then as it flashes back, you see this giant, giant beast. This is Leatherface, right, who pulls up right behind him and just cracks him in like the head, neck area with a giant hammer. And it just blood splatters all over the TV. And this is where it starts to pay homage to the original.
Yes.
Leatherface drags Kemper into the basement where you get that iconic scene where he slams the door and then it shakes the whole house. And then Aaron, she's jolted and she sits up. She's like, what was that? And then Uncle Monty's got that look on his face like, I know what it is. And then she starts looking around the house. What are you guys' thoughts on Kemper getting killed? Go ahead, Mike.
First of all, I like that they killed Kemper because of what comes later towards the end. Oh, anyway, I thought it was a good kill. I actually really like that they paid homage to the original with the – you had to have the steel door in this movie. You had to have something that kind of tipped the cap to that. And so I like the scene. I like the uncle. God, he's such a gross – it's going to sound mean. He's such a gross old man just in general. He's feeling all over Jessica Biel's ass. And by the way – funny note, this man's not an amputee in real life. His knees are bent. They had to modify the wheelchair because he's 6'5 in real life. They had to modify the wheelchair. His knees are bent on it. He was a good sport. He was basically sitting on his knees for hours and hours at a time during filming. And he's old. And so I'm sure that wasn't the easiest thing ever. And so shout out to that guy. I'm drawing a blank on the name. But yeah, man. Really good scene, and I like that they killed Kemper quick. It caught me off guard. I was like, whoa, okay, because really, I was going to kill somebody first. Sorry, Pepper, you got to go. Get the hell out of here, Pepper. And by the way, she's a – man, that girl can scream. Anyways, go ahead.
Go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, this was probably check mark number two for dumbass Aaron decisions. Going in there and making the call, I can see. But as soon as she decided that she was going to go further into the house, into a bathroom with this guy, that was too much. That was too much. That kind of took me. I was like, man, no way that chick does that. But, and again, I liked that they took out Kemper too, because, you know, it adds, like I said, if you have guys around that can fight, you know, that's a lot different than just having, you know, girls try to get, you know, running from the killer, and they get knocked out quick. And I don't think that there's a whole lot of, there's nothing he could have done. I mean, he was just done for, and all he was doing was just kind of looking for Aaron. So, and I think they did great in the scene. And this is a great introductory scene with Leatherface. And, and talking about the house too, I read that they actually, like, when they were scouting locations, they came across this house by accident. And so, I mean, it's perfect. I mean, it is the quintessential, you know, like I said, you could drive 30 minutes from where I live and yep. find some stuff like this. And, yep. You know, no air conditioning, no whatever. And this is 2000, you know, in 19. So
you can go right down the road and do it for me, man. Right
exactly. Exactly. So yeah, I love this scene.
I agree with that.
I love this house. I love it. Yes. I like this house more than the original's house. Mm-hmm. Just as far as mood, atmosphere, creepiness, I really, really, really love this house. And it's a real house. They didn't build a set.
Well, next scene we're introduced to. I don't know how to describe Sheriff Hoyt or Lee Ermey. I really don't know how to describe him. He's a perfect evil hillbilly redneck sheriff, just demented human being. He plays this part perfect, guys. He might be the best character in the movie, honestly.
I think he is.
Of both the movies he's in. We flash back to the van where Pepper, Morgan, and Andy are, and the sheriff pulls up. And Mike told me this earlier, or in a text, you know. He has some choice dialogue to be a sheriff talking to talking to the people he's supposed to be protecting and serving. Mike, you want to drop that dialogue real quick that he tells them?
Excuse me. You mind getting the fuck out of my way, son?
Now, to me, that should be like,
I smell bullshit. That's my favorite. He says that like three times. I smell bullshit.
Yeah, this he's got some weird vocabulary and dialogue for a trained police officer. That should they should definitely have some red flags at the second he opens his mouth to him. So he walks into
right. Oh wait, you gotta have the classic before we move on. You gotta have. Are you ready? Am I allowed to drop this?
Go ahead.
This one's still wet. What you boys been doing to her?
Yeah, that's what I wrote down. Was like the second he walks into the van. You know, he sees this girl. He's like, ooh, she's kind of a looker. You know, and his grand plan to dispose of the body is wrap it in plastic wrap and just put it in his truck, in his car. It's like, that should be the biggest red flag ever. So, and, you know, Morgan and Andy want no part of doing this, but the sheriff is like, hey, she's dead in the damn doornail. Get your ass over and help me wrap this body up. You know, so they start wrapping her head, wrapping her body up in plastic wrap. And like Mike said, he's being a pervert. He's like, he's grabbing her breast and he's feeling downstairs, talking about how she's wet. And it's like, and Andy's like, dude, can we just not talk right now? Because this is, I already don't want to do this and you're making this even weirder for me. And so they wrap the body up and the sheriff tells the two guys, go put it in my car. And this is a funny scene to me because he starts talking to Pepper. He's like, I have respect for a dead body just like anybody else. And then they're going to put it in the back. So he's like, what the, or don't put that goddamn body in the back of my back seat. Put it in the trunk. So it got, you know, it's just one of those transitional scenes that's really funny. And after they get the body wrapped up and put in the trunk, you know, he just turns around, looks at him, gives him the salute. Protect and serve. That's what we do. And then they
that's
just drive off.
That's what we
off.
Do.
Yeah, protect and serve. Well, what's you guys' thoughts on the introduction of R. Lee Ermey?
Yeah, there's not a whole lot else you can say about this guy besides, like you said, he is the best character in this movie. He makes this movie. He is, goddamn, he's so unnerving and just with everything he says.
Legitimately scary. Legitimately a scary character.
And I have not seen. I haven't seen it enough, but I remember that in the next one, which is what, the prequel to this one, right. He carries that movie just like he does this one.
He takes that movie over big time.
And I know you said that, you know, it should be red flags, and I'm sure there was all kinds of red flags, but I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, you are, you know, y'all are trying to get out of there, and this is the sheriff, and there's nobody else to go to but this guy. So, I mean, it's, man, dude, yeah, I love the tension in this scene, even though, because I laughed at that same part you did, Nico, with the get that goddamn nasty back, you know, body out of my back seat. But I still I laughed at that, but it's still like it was like an uncomfortable laugh. It's not like, hey, that's funny. It's like, oh, my God, this dude.
He's funny in a scary ass way.
He's funny like, if you weren't there.
Right. If I right. Ha ha. But if he's there, holy shit, this guy's for real. Like, yeah. Nah, man, it's. Every now and then, some of his and the scene in the van with the gun. I know we're not there yet, but man, that scene,
yeah,
whew, tension.
And another thing about this is, and you know, we kind of talked about this with Scream, how it kind of, you know, implies that there were a whole, you know, movies, could be possibly movies before that happened, you know, with Cotton Weary and all that stuff. It's the same thing with this. I mean, you've got this whole, you know, how he takes that gun and goes, huh, where'd you get this? And puts it right back in his holster, you know, like obviously she somehow, it implies I took that she somehow got the gun from him to, you know, before she escaped. But, you know, and so it makes you like, man, you know, you kind of want to see, you know, what happened, what did this girl have to go through, you know, to get to this point too. It does a really good job of putting backstory that they haven't really, you know, put in there.
I've watched this movie so many times and never noticed that thing about the gun you just said. That's such a great point. I've never put two and two together with that.
And that might not even be the case. That's just how I took it. I took it like that.
Now, that's very interesting. I'm going to have to rewatch it again just to see that part. After, you know, after they see this, Erin's still at the house looking for Kemper. She can't find him. So she heads back to the van.
And by the way, Nico, real quick.
Go ahead, brother.
Where the hell is all this water coming from, and where is it going in this basement?
It's cleaner water in the basement than he had up in the...
Dude, you ain't lying. This is like... You can't tell me that water doesn't exist so we could get Jessica Biel wet. That sounds...
I actually wrote that down.
That's exactly why it's there. I mean, thank you. Thank you. But still.
They do it to Jordana Brewster in the prequel, too.
Yeah, and again, thank you.
Erin can't find Kemper at the house, so she goes back to the van, and there's still no Kemper. Then all of a sudden, you know, they're like, you know, she's just walking around, where is Kemper, where is Kemper? And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, they hear this horn, a car horn blowing. So they walk into, like, this just abandoned field of, like, a junkyard or whatever. And this is where Morgan kind of screws with him a little bit. He puts his hand, like, inside of a trunk, and he acts like something grabs him, and he's, like, screaming, yelling, it's got me, it's got me. Then he just pulls his arm out, starts laughing, ha, 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 ha. They're not there like, ah, oh, screw you, that wasn't funny. Then this is where it starts getting weird for him. They find this jar, this mason jar. I don't know what the liquid is in this jar, but it's got a picture of a family. And one of the people in this picture look real familiar because one of the people in that picture is that girl who just killed themselves in their van. They're like, is that the girl who just killed ourselves? And they're like, and then they look on the ground and they see like real, like human teeth and all that. And they're like, what is going on out here now? This is getting weird now. What are you guys' thoughts on them finding the jar and the teeth and all that?
I mean, it's unnerving. I mean, like we've said a bunch of times, and we're going to end up repeating ourselves a lot because this movie seriously has some really unnerving stuff. And that's the one thing they do well in a different way, but they do in the first movie well, they do it in this movie well, is make it really unnerving. I mean, this one's more of like a typical out to scare you type slasher. The first one's more of a false reality, fake documentary, snuff type movie. But they do, it's still the same effectiveness as far as making you feel just ugh. And the teeth in the jar, and they do a really good job with effects in this movie, the way they make them look. And so bravo to that, bravo to the cinematography, because they do a great job making that just look nasty. I mean, the whole, anything that comes out of this house involved with these people is nasty. And it's just, ugh, I can put myself there and just feel gross.
And they, they never really explained the picture in the jar thing. And I honestly, I guess it's up to your own imagination to kind of make up, you know, what's the point of this? I guess this girl wasn't really being held like hostage, hanging up in a, you know, by chains underneath the basement, which is like I said, like, I kind of want to know what all the, you know, what are the sequence of events that led to this? Because, like, you know, why would, is she the one that put the picture in the jar and hid it so that she could go remember her past life or something? Or is she, you know, I don't know, you know, that's, and I assume, and I honestly just thought about this now, because I always wondered, you know, when they drive away later in the car and the wheels come off and stuff, I assume that this is when they do that. You know, when they're all gone and,
right.
And you know, was it Jedediah that you know, kind of put the stick on the horn to kind of draw them away from the van? Was that the plan? That's kind of what I put together. But
Jedediah doesn't help.
Right.
Yeah, Jedediah's not on board with what the family
right.
does.
Right.
So,
right.
But I do agree that this is probably when they go, you know, take the lug nuts or whatever off. But I don't think Jedediah had anything, because he tries to help get them out of there.
So there's a deleted scene involving Jedediah where they were supposed to kill him, and it was cut for being too gruesome New Line. New Line's like, nah, this ain't it. And I'm not gonna lie, I like when the movie has the balls to kill a kid. That sounds so weird, I know. But in the subtext of horror movies, I like when the movie has the balls to just kill the kid, like Halloween 18. They went, well, okay, here we go. This is real deal. Because in some of the other movies, Michael, he doesn't kill kids. But in that one, he does. And so I was like, man, if they left that in, that would have even made it more unsettling and more unnerving. If it had come out in 06, like the prequel, he probably would have been dead.
Yeah. Well, after this little junkyard scene, Morgan and Pepper are ready to get the hell out of here. But Aaron's like, we're not leaving Kemper. So they start, you know, doing this voting thing again. And Andy's like, I can't leave without him. So this is where Aaron and Andy head back to the house. They get the grand plan of Aaron already knows Uncle Monty. So she goes to the front door to distract him, and Andy sneaks into the house. And Andy, you know, he's looking around, kind of saying Kemper's name on the low. And then this is where it gets Aaron's attention. He goes to the refrigerator and knocks this big jar, or I don't know what it is, off the top of the refrigerator, and it makes a loud noise. And then Aaron runs in the house, and they meet up, and they're all fine. But then Uncle Monty rolls back into the house, and he sees him there. He's like, what the hell are you doing in my house? And then this is where he gives one of those lines where, you know, you kind of get the goose pimples on your arm. He's like, you two are so dead, you don't even know it. And they're like, huh? Then he starts hitting. He takes his cane and he starts hitting the wooden floor. Bring it. And that's actually the name. If y'all want to go watch just this scene on YouTube, just search Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Bring It. And he just starts hitting the floor. Bring it. Bring it. Then he hits it one last time, and it goes, and the camera turns to their face. And you hear a ying, the chainsaw, he rips the door open, and the chainsaw is ready to go. And they're like, and Andy's like, oh, shit. And he's got, like, I don't, what's it called? It's a lug wrench, you know, one of those that has the four, it's like a cross or whatever.
Right, right.
They go to run away, and he drops the lug wrench, and Uncle Monty rolls on top of it. But as Jessica Biel's running away, she pushes his wheelchair off of it. And then Leatherface takes a chainsaw and hits him. Like, this is awesome to me. He takes a chainsaw, hits the lug wrench. He's holding it, fighting it. And, you know, he eventually knocks the chainsaw into the ground. And this is where life starts getting real bad for my man Andy. Real bad. He gets out of the house. And this is a really cool scene just visually to me. They're running through these clotheslines of sheets, just white sheets.
Right.
You know, he's just running through, ripping through them. And you think he's about to get away, but then all of a sudden, Leatherface is to the side of him. And you just hear, ying! And all of a sudden, his leg from the knee down ain't there no more. And he falls on the ground. Yeah, and he, you know, he just starts screaming in pain, which Olive's Wood grabs his nub, and Leatherface picks him up and just walks him into the house. What are you guys' thoughts on the introduction of Leatherface to the two characters?
All right, so I'll just say I like the cinematography of this scene, but I don't like to me, what makes this movie scary is the realism. So you can pick apart the realism in this scene more than anything, like right. any of the other ones. It bothers. This is my nitpick scene right here is this one.
Right.
And because, you know, the dude's running through, you know, through the sheets, and, you know, Leatherface is kind of stalking him back and forth. But it's not like he has a knife, man. He's got a goddamn chainsaw that's loud as hell. And the dude, like, it's like a push button chainsaw or something, because he cranks it up in like an instant to be able to sneak up on my man. Like, you can't, you're not going to sneak up on somebody. I don't know. I don't like, and the fact that, and I can talk about it later whenever we get into this too, because this isn't the end of my boy here, but he, you know, he gets his leg cut off, but he's still conscious. He's barely screaming. He's, you know, I mean, it's like, the dude's going to lose a lot of blood really quick, and he's going to be very right. unconscious very quickly, which is not even to mention, how did you not know which way to go? Because the dude's got a damn chainsaw and you can't hear it. You can't hear which way, how you going to accidentally run into my man with the chainsaw? That's what I'm saying. I mean, there's not a mile of sheets in there. This can't be. It's not this dramatic maze of sheets, I don't think.
It's not a Texas Chainsaw movie without the chainsaw through the sheet scene. Oh, so it had to be in there somewhere, I guess. But again, you're right. I mean, if I'm going to nitpick anything, it would be the realism of that particular scene. But you know what? I'm almost willing to forgive it just because of what ends up happening to him later. I guess we'll wait. But man, screw you, Aaron. That's all I'm going to say.
Brian.
You make everything worse.
You know, as many times as I've watched this movie, I never realized until about a minute ago how actually dumb this scene is. I guess I'm just so enamored with what eventually happens to Andy and the actual his leg getting cut off to think, how do you not hear a chainsaw right there? You know what I'm saying? Because you're right. A chainsaw is so loud. It's not like Jason with a machete just standing there and just hacks him or nothing. That's such a good point that I never even thought about. A chainsaw is super loud. And why did you run through the sheets of all places in that giant field? Man, that's a good point. All right, let's just move on before I but, you know, I've seen this movie well over 20 times, and I don't know how you don't hear a chainsaw right there. But Erin runs back to the van, and she is horrified because she just saw Leatherface, which everyone should be. And of course, because this is a horror movie, the van doesn't crank now.
You don't see.
You know, the van they drove from Mexico across Texas all of a sudden doesn't crank. And the sheriff shows up again. And, you know, she starts, you know, she's crying. She's panicking. She's like, my friend, they killed my friend. They killed my friend. And then the sheriff's like, oh, killed somebody. All right, now we're getting somewhere. And she's like, calm down, calm down. Then he looks on the dash and sees the weed. And all of a sudden, you know, one little, I guess a roach or whatever. I don't smoke weed, so I can't talk weed that well. He finds a little bit of weed, and he's like, all of a sudden, that just trumps, you know, a possible murder. So he's like, all of you, get out of the van. And he gets all of them on the ground.
Smoking and, the devil's know, lettuce.
Yeah. And, you know, he's looking at their IDs, throwing them on the ground. And Jessica and Aaron, she's still freaking out, like, my friends, they're going to die. They're going to die. And this is a pretty scary scene to me, just thinking of if I was one of them. He starts shooting the ground right by their head. What are you guys' thoughts on this part? Just, you know, they're just laying on the ground, face in the dirt. The sheriff is shooting at them, doesn't care about their friends getting killed.
Man, again, this is just another effective way to – this is another effective use of the sheriff. Like, he – as we said before, again, I told you that we were going to repeat ourselves, but it bears – I mean, it's for good reason. He carries this movie scene by scene until you get into the Leatherface scenes that, you know, that scare you, that are for the big shock value, the gore and stuff. He keeps the tension and the horror and how scary it is. He keeps that going throughout the movie. And this is just another effective scene with that, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I guess we're about to get into the Morgan scene, the very next scene.
Oh,
but,
God.
Oh, yeah.
And we can talk. I'll hold my comments for that one. But, yeah, as far as this one goes, like, you know, just, again, very tense, you know, scene that is about to build up and be even more tense.
This movie does hit you with bam, ba bam, ba bam, ba bam, ba bam. There's not a lot of low, like, there's not a lot of low to bring you back up. It's a lot of bam, 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 bam. And I like that. I mean, I like some movies that go boom just to sell you in the end. But this one is – it's 2003 is really what it is.
This would have been a fun movie to see in theaters. It would have been really cool to see.
Man, I wish I was into horror in 03. I would have loved to see it in theaters.
Yeah, and I'm the old man that was seeing it in the theaters, and that's probably why it bothered me so much. I mean,
a lot of people say that. You're not the only one. A lot of people that saw this movie in theaters say it seriously disturbed them. And it did the first time I ever saw it. I saw it in a friend of mine's. They have this den, and we were all in there. It's a den/office, and we were all in there watching it on a really big TV. It was almost like being in a movie theater. We had the lights off. Scary as hell the first time I ever saw it. It freaked me the hell out, man. I mean, it freaked all of us out. So,
well, and I'll tell you too, there's not been very many movies that I've gone to where, you know, at the end, either, you know, the crowd's either clapping or ha ha and everything, whatever. But the crowd after this movie was just almost exhausted. And it was just, I remember that very distinctly, even though it's been that long ago. I remember everybody just, you know, when it was over, you're just, everybody just, it didn't get up even right off the bat. It was just sitting there like, God dang, like, man, that's, and that was the first, probably the only horror movie that I've seen in the theater that actually did that.
Mm-hmm. You just get it, go, just exhale.
Exhaust.
And like Brian said, we're about to get into probably my personal favorite scene of the entire movie. But this scene is intercut at the beginning. I'm going to get this out of the way, then we'll jump into the Morgan scene. It flashes back to Leatherface in the basement. You know, he's cutting Kemper's face off. You know, it's going, you know, it's kind of giving you a visual of like all the dead bodies down there and all that. But it's showing Leatherface cutting Kemper's face off. And he takes whatever mask he has on now. It's just all old flesh. And he cut Kemper's face. I mean, he's wearing Kemper's face now, which we'll see in a little while. But let's jump into this Morgan scene, because I don't know about you guys, but this is probably the most tense scene of this entire movie to me, just one-on-one acting, and this is awesome. So Sheriff Hoyt tells Morgan, get up, get in the van, I want to see how this happens. So and Morgan is not having it. Who would want to do what Morgan has to do right now? So the sheriff wants Morgan to sit exactly where the girl who killed herself, exactly where she sat at, in all the blood, all the whatever, you know, whatever human juices are there. He wants Morgan to put this gun in his mouth and show him how she killed herself. And at first, you know, he doesn't stick the gun all the way in his mouth. He sticks it underneath his chin, and he's like, that ain't how she done it. There's a hole in the back glass, and that's not in the roof. So, you know, he's starting to – I don't know if he's crying, but, you know, the man is trembling. He's trembling like anybody would.
Right.
He's got the handshakes going. And he puts the gun in his mouth, and he's like, now pull the trigger or whatever. And this is where Aaron and Pepper get up, and we start having, you know, you ever see those scenes in a cartoon or a movie where you got a devil on one shoulder and an angel on the other?
Oh, yeah.
So Morgan just, he snaps right now. He pulls this gun out of his mouth and aims it right at the sheriff. And he says, get on the floor. And this is where Aaron says, don't do it. Don't shoot him. And Pepper's like, kill his ass, shoot his ass now. And
Do it. Shoot him.
And this is where R. Lee Ermey looks at him. He's like, if he kills me, your accomplice is the murder. And this is where your heart's beating. Like, this scene is so good to me. And Morgan, he listens to the devil, guys. he pulls the trigger, and it's just a dry fire, I guess you call it.
Yeah.
And then and the sheriff goes, you just killed the sheriff. And, you know, Morgan's really trembling now. So now he pulls his own revolver out, points it right at his face, like, I ought to blow your fucking brains out. Get out of the van. He gets him into the car. And Brian and Mike, whoever wants to go first, I want to hear you guys' thoughts on the scene. This is my probably my favorite scene of the whole movie, just the tension.
No, yeah, I agree. It's definitely probably the most tense scene in the whole movie. And, I mean, shout out to Jonathan Tucker that played Morgan in this scene, because he looked absolutely terrified.
God, he did so good.
Amazing acting, which we've reviewed, what, four movies before this that were just older, 80s, 90s. And, you know, we nitpicked the acting. And this movie, you cannot nitpick the acting in. I mean, it's top notch with that. And, you know, him holding the gun, everybody in the theater, everybody watching this movie, God, shoot him, shoot him, shoot him. So if he hadn't turned around and shot at the dude, I think everybody would be like, oh, that's dumb. Or he did what everybody probably would have done in that situation, to be honest with you. And you would have been screwed, which is, you know, another great part of this movie where it's like, hey, if you're in this movie, not a whole lot you can do to survive.
Yeah, man, I agree. This scene is really great, because like a couple of other scenes we've talked about, I can just put myself in Morgan's shoes, and I know damn well I'm shooting this motherfucker. Yeah. Like, screw this guy. By now, I don't know, maybe it's just me. By now, I think I've figured out that he's not a real sheriff. Like, I don't know. In my mind, I'm like, well, wait a damn minute, man. No freaking way are you a real sheriff. And nothing. Screw this guy. Pow. Now. How was he supposed to know that it was going to be Trump?
Right.
Oh, man. I almost feel bad for Morgan in this whole movie, because he never wanted to be involved in this shit in the first place. And he should have just listened to his gut and got the hell up out of there, left his friends. That Leonard Skinner to wait, Ronnie Van Zant, or whichever Van Zant's alive, I don't know. But, man, I'm telling you, this scene, you're right. It might be my favorite. And a lot of people expect some big kill, crazy scene. No, this scene is a good, just well acted movie scene, and it's so intense. And the first time you ever see it, you're like, because I don't know, you, I mean, they might have killed off the sheriff, but knowing the original, it wouldn't have made a whole lot of sense to do that, just, you know, given the fact that the family is kind of this mixed mash of characters. Although I like the way they don't give away that this is the family until they all are in the house together. They do a really good job of this being random people in this town. And so, again, this fake sheriff can go to hell. But it's a really well-acted scene, man. Bravo to both of them.
Yeah, and if you're Andy or Kimber maybe in this scene, or I mean, honestly, me, if I was in this scene, you know, at that point, look, you've already tried to kill the dude. That's when you just start throwing punches. You try to get out of there. Like, you could probably, he could, you know, could probably take him. But Morgan is, you know, the nerd, the weakest one of the three guys that were there. You know, it's believable that he's probably just like, wow, I'm fucked. I'm done.
Yeah, I agree with that. And after this scene, after Morgan gets out of the van, it just flash cuts to Andy. Oh, poor Andy, man. He's...
Oh, man.
After he gets his leg cut off, y'all, Leatherface takes him down into the basement, and it shows every single brutal thing that happens to this guy. He's screaming for Aaron. He's grabbing at this wall. He's ripping his fingernails off, and it shows it. And you're like, oh, my fingers. Then it shows him getting slammed onto a meat hook, which looked awful. And to rub salt in the wound, no pun intended, actually a lot of pun intended, Leatherface grabs a handful of salt and shoves it right onto this guy's leg where he just got cut off. And then he wraps it up like, you know, like a piece of meat or whatever. This man goes through so much, y'all. And I feel terrible for Andy, because he was just trying to help his buddy out.
Right. I agree.
And he never passes out. He gets his leg cut off. He's hung on this meat hook. He's been dragging, you know, they drug him from the, you know, the outside all the way inside with his leg cut off, and he's still conscious. Either he's, you know, he's one tough SOB, or yeah, you got to suspend reality a little bit.
Yeah, you definitely got to suspend reality.
Yeah, so
now we're shown the sheriff has Morgan in the back of his car, and this scene is actually a little bit funny to me, because the sheriff starts fucking with this guy bad. He's like, so, where are you guys going? He's like, Leonard Skinner concert. And then he's like, oh, I like Skinner. You know, got good taste in music. Then he's like, then this is where the sheriff's like a little extra with him. He's like, so what are you going to do with the tickets now? Or what? I think that's what he said. and then he says, you can have them. He's like, oh, bribery, huh? Then he hits him right in the mouth, I think with a like a beer bottle or something.
Yeah.
Hits him right in the mouth. And, you know, he's like coughing, spitting up blood. And then all of a sudden it shows him spitting his teeth up. And then R. Lee Ermey rips his teeth out and he starts laughing. He's like, hey, we got something else in common. Go ahead, Mike.
If that's not a dead giveaway that this is not a sheriff, I don't know what is. This dude had a beer bottle in his car.
Yes.
Oh, that now, granted, that beer bottle is only there so he could freaking, you know, throw it at him. But still, I mean, we're drinking on the job here, Sheriff. Come on, man. That's just as bad as the weed that you found. So, man, if this ain't a red flag that, oh, crap, this guy's he's a phony, a big fat phony, then I don't know what else would be.
Go ahead real quick, Brian.
Just, man, the small town bullshit, man. I mean, there's a lot of real actual police officers in small towns that would, you know, be having mason jars full of whatever that was full of. You know, or was it a beer bottle? I thought it was a mason jar. It might have been a beer bottle. But, you know, I mean, man, I don't know, man. Morgan just jacked up and it's not over for him yet.
After the sheriff hits him in the mouth, he CBs over and he says, go. I can't remember exactly his wording, but he's saying, go ahead. I'm heading back. You can go to the. He's basically CBing to Leatherface, hey, go to the van now, because we're flashed back to Aaron and Pepper. And she's hot wiring the van to get it running. And, you know, Pepper is freaking out. She is, like, panicking. She's trying
she's
to hold
annoying.
His flashlight. Yeah, she's holding his flashlight, shaking, can't hold it still. And as soon as they get the van running, they take off driving. And maybe 20 feet later, the front wheel falls off. And as soon as the wheel falls off, you know, they start freaking out. Then all of a sudden, you hear the chainsaw going. It's like, just like you guys said, this movie has no slow moments. There's maybe what, like the dialogue scene with the sheriff and Morgan, that was like the slow moment. But heck, then he gets hit in the mouth of the bottle, so it's not even that slow.
Even the scene that comes later in the trailer, while slow, is intense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's only slow for maybe 30, 40 seconds, and then you realize what this is, and you're like, holy shit, this is crazy. And so, again, there is no dip in this movie.
Yeah. So Leatherface jumps onto the top of the van. He starts chainsawing through the roof of this van, trying to hit him. He's hitting, you know, the seats. And then all of a sudden, he grabs a hold of Aaron, and Pepper jumps out of the van, and she takes off running. And I think Leatherface clips her, and she falls down. And then, you know, Aaron is screaming. Then Leatherface this is the worst. I'll go ahead and spoil it. This is the worst kill of the movie to me. All you see is but the scene is not bad. Leatherface just kills her real quick with a chainsaw. And then Aaron sees him turn around and it's got her boyfriend's face on. And you're like, oh, crap. He's got my boyfriend's face. He's wearing my boyfriend's face. And you've got all these like feathers or stuffing or whatever it is flying around them. What's your guys' quick thoughts on just the kill and the first visual of Kemper's face on Leatherface?
Oh, God, man. First time I saw it, like, I got one of the jump backs, man. It is awesome. That's a cool, like, it's not something I saw coming, although I probably should have. But I freaking loved it. I thought it was awesome, man.
This is a scene I distinctly remember the most in that theater, because as soon as he shows that, shows Kimber's face on him, you know, everybody just goes like, fuck.
Yeah, it's one of those, oh, fuck moments.
Oh, my God. And yeah, that kill is probably the second worst to me. But, you know, it's... You know, I guess it didn't need that. I guess it didn't need more, because, you know, it's forgotten about real quick with that face moment. Right. You know, and I know we're about to probably get into this, but that's my other nitpick about this movie, is that, you know, when these people are running from him, they, especially Aaron, they don't run. They stop. Like, why? Nobody in their right mind would stop after running from this dude. Like, you would run until you literally could not run anymore and then run some more.
Yeah. After she sees Leatherface with Kemper's face on, she takes another. This is a nitpick kind of to me. There's a lot of running through the woods in this movie.
There really is.
It's like a back and forth from van to house, house to van to house. But they run through the woods again, and Erin arrives at this trailer. So she starts beating on the door. Help, 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 help. They let her in. And she sees this, the tea lady. That's the only name she's got. She's a really, really overweight lady. And there's another woman in there. I don't know. She kind of just looks, I don't know how to describe her look. She's just short, black hair. She looks kind of, I don't know, like drugged out maybe, methed out maybe. And, you know, she's like, turn that teapot off. You know, he'll hear, the scary man will hear the tea going off. And they're like saying, just calm down, sweetie. Drink some tea. You're panicking. And she's like, I don't want tea. I just want to call the police. But she eventually does end up drinking some tea. And she starts walking through this house. But, that's right. They say they don't have a phone, but then the phone rings. So she's walking through. She's like, I thought she didn't have a phone. Then they hear a baby crying. And she realizes that they stole the baby, too. And then all of a sudden, Erin starts feeling woozy, and she passes out on the floor. You guys got any quick thoughts on this trailer scene real quick?
Well, that's what I was getting at, man. Like, you know, you are not stopping at any goddamn trailer in the middle of the woods if you are Erin running like this. And this is checkmark number 3 for dumbass thing Aaron's doing. And, Jessica Biel has great acting to this entire movie, but in this particular scene, it stood out to me where she doesn't seem that distraught.
Right.
She just seems stupid, and it's I mean, it's just this scene to me. I don't like just because of that, but it definitely adds, the whole thing adds to the creepiness of the town.
So creepy.
She looks inbred. That girl does anyway, like with meth teeth.
They
and
both
just
do.
Like,
I'm not gonna lie, man, both women do.
You can go 30. You can go 30 minutes north of him here, buddy, and run into those same type of people.
Yeah, same. Except mine's about 8 that way, west. So, but no, man. I mean, again, it's kind of a nothing scene, but you kind of discover this is Leatherface's sister. That's kind of creepy because, oh God, this whole thing. Well, I guess I should say sister. I don't know, but either way, I mean, you just kind of discover everyone in this town is dead set on making sure nothing happens to poor Thomas, whatever, Hewitt. And so it's kind of the one scene I'm like, yeah, okay, it's creepy. It's got some eerie value to it because, again, both ladies do a really good job of making themselves creepy. But no, that's pretty much all I have on it.
Yeah, after this scene, you know, Erin passes out, and then all of a sudden she's inside of the house. And Sheriff Hoyt is pouring beer on her to wake her up. And it's a real quick flash outside. Jedediah is knocking on the window. They're like, you can't come inside until you start playing along with what we do. Then Luda May is telling Erin, y'all are the type of people who would pick on my boy Thomas. And she's like, and it's just weird. And then all of a sudden Leatherface comes upstairs where they are. And Leatherface takes her downstairs into the basement that's flooded with water for some reason. And this is where, you know, he just throws her down the stairs. She's walking around. And this is where she sees Andy on the meat hook still. And, you know, she tries to, like, lift him off of it, but she's not strong enough. And I guess, like Brian said, I don't know if he's maybe bled out enough. Maybe he's too weak to help her. So she just says, or he says, just put me out of my misery. Please just kill me. So she puts him out of his misery. She grabs a knife, and for some reason, she stabs him in the stomach, which is probably not the best place to stab someone.
Suffer some more.
Yes, yeah. It's like, yeah, just suffer some more, guy. And Mike is freaking out. Mike, go ahead. You're raging right now.
You fucking idiot.
Yeah, go ahead. Go off.
Two things. One, stop pulling on him. You're making it worse. Oh, the man is already up on a hook, and with every tug, I'm like, ugh. And
with the missing leg.
I don't know. I get right. I guess it was eerie for me, or like, ugh, for me, because I put myself in his shoes, and I'm feeling every tug. And I'm like, ugh, stop freaking, yeah. Okay. And then he wants to put out of his misery. Okay, fine. There's no other, like, the man's already on a hook. You're adding another sharp abdominal pain, stabs him in the gut like freaking Ghostface, okay? And so, look, man, she redeems herself. I do like Erin in the end. I want her to win and survive because she uses her badass instincts and is a really kick-ass, I guess I'll say final girl, but man, she's one of the ones Neve Campbell made fun of and screamed. That's all I'm going to say. She is an idiot here.
Yep.
Sorry.
Brian, you got anything else, Brian, or you want to just jump on?
No, you can go ahead and jump on it. The only thing I was going to say was I was going to bring up the water in the basement again. I can understand, I guess, the water in the basement a little bit more just because it's nasty. Like, everything is wet. I think it makes the whole damn place just even nastier, the fact that it's wet. And it's just everything looks just disgusting, like, just because sure. It's got water and stuff everywhere around it. Now when we get to the meatpacking plant and the sprinklers come on, now I think that's a whole I want to see Jessica Biel on her shirt wetness there, I think.
Oh, it absolutely was.
Now after she kills Andy, you know, she's like grabbing on his feet, you know, crying, you know, she's hurt that she killed her friend. But she starts walking around and she sees Morgan in the bathtub. I mean, he's got like his head down. And this is kind of a jump scare, but I guess it's not false, I don't think. Because I know that's my nitpick. He like wakes up and springs up, you know, scares her. And he's really weak too. But Jedediah is trying to like lead him out of there. But, you know, of course, as soon as they start to leave, Leatherface chase scene number 17,000 of the movie. And so they start running through these tunnels from the basement or whatever. You know, Leatherface, you know, I think his chainsaw cuts off one time. So he has to stop and crank it back up. You know, he grabs a hold of Erin as they try and climb out of this cellar. And then Jedediah, you know, grabs a hold of his hand, bites his finger. And, you know, they finally get out. It's that scene from the trailer where, you know, they slam the cellar door.
Right.
And then they start running off through the woods again. And they make it into this, like, abandoned house or whatever. And, you know, they both just, they push this couch in front of the door because, you know, a chainsaw can't cut through that. And then they both hide in different rooms.
Hey, Mike, was that the scene where, you know, where Jedediah bites his hand? Is that the deleted scene where he dies? Is that where he's supposed to die? Because, I mean, I know it cuts off and goes wherever, but I'm just.
Yeah, it is. It is eventually because of that. I've never seen that scene, but they talk about it. And see, it's not even in that cut, that extended cut that I have. And so they just completely decide to take that out altogether. But as far as, I'm pretty sure that's where, because, man, that's the one time you get to actually see him betray, well, the horn too, but you see him betray the family. And if I had to guess, that makes the most sense right there is Leatherface says, "The hell with you, dude," and freaking chainsaws his head off. I'm pretty sure that's the kill, is that he chainsawed his head off right there. He just ripped through the shit. I'm pretty sure that was the kill. So. Ooh. A little kid head go flying. I could kind of see why New Line. Man, it would have been ballsy. I would have loved it. Sorry. Ugh.
Yeah, I mean, even in 2018, all Halloween did was break a kid's neck, cutting a whole kid's head off in 03. Woo! That would have been pushing it.
Hey, all right. Pennywise has been straight killing kids for 30 years.
Yeah, and in this scene, you know, Morgan's hiding in one room and Erin's hiding in another. She's looking through like a little peephole in the door. And she sees Leatherface just looking around. They kind of make, you know, one of those, you know, horror movie eye contacts. They make eye contact, but they don't. Right. But then she looks through the peephole again. She can't find him. Then all of a sudden, you know, it's just kind of dead. Then all of a sudden, Leatherface comes from behind. And Leatherface, you know, like breaks both of his hands through the wooden wall behind her. And you know, they're freaking out. And she's got... And Leatherface has Erin on the ground getting ready to chainsaw her. But Morgan runs out of the room and from some room out of nowhere and just pushes him, which thanks for saving Erin, but you really ain't got a chance now.
I was going to say, I know that's a very noble thing to do. My God, if I were him, that would have been the last person I would have wanted to save. Kiss my ass.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess he became a hero all of a sudden. Yeah. But Leatherface picks him up, and he's handcuffed still, so he hangs him on like a chandelier. And my man Morgan has a bad death too, guys.
Oh, God.
He's just hanging. Morgan. He's hanging from a chandelier. And he cranks his chainsaw back up, and he cuts his man in half up the middle from the groin area. And it's like, oh, no. Mike, you got any quick thoughts on this Morgan death real quick?
Oh, poor Morgan. I almost feel worse for him than I do Aaron. Or not Aaron, the other one. Sorry, but, man, I'm telling you. I mean, it's not like my – I'll put it up there with one of my favorite kills, though. Like, as far as just the way they pull it off and the way it looks, I'll put it up with one of my favorite kills. But I don't really have anything to add to it that you didn't already add to it. But I just say, man, screw poor freaking Morgan. I would not have saved her for anything. After, man, screw you. I'm sneaking out the back. You get
but he's handcuffed. Off. He really has nothing else he can
do. Oh, I'm about to say, there wasn't anything he was going to do, I guess. But still, man.
Yeah, we got another chase scene going on. And this is where another part where it pays homage to the original. They jump. She crawls through like a barbed wire fence, I guess. And he jumps over it. And as he falls down, the chainsaw hits him in the leg. It's just another cut scene from like the original where he cuts himself. And then Aaron runs into a slaughterhouse. This is actually I like this this little scene in the slaughterhouse. You know, he's chasing her throughout the slaughterhouse, and this time I didn't know she's actually a vegan, so it's kind of so she's hiding like behind these giant slabs of cows, and Leatherface can't find her, so he turns on this machine. Like to where it moves all the like slabs around, so she's like freaking out, and this is definitely the part where they start sexualizing Jessica Biel extra a lot, because they have this girl in a small white tank top in a freezing cold room with the water sprinklers on. So once the machine moves all those cow slabs, he finds her, but she manages to get away, and as she gets out of that room, she grabs a meat cleaver, excuse me. She gets a meat cleaver, and she runs to where, you know, like, all of the employees, like, you know, it's just their locker room or whatever. And she hides. She has a good plan right now. She hides in the locker, and Leatherface comes out of nowhere. And, you know, he's just looking, and he's about to walk past him. Then she starts screaming at him, "Hey, hey." So he turns around, and he starts opening lockers. Then he hears, like, a noise out of one of them. And he yanks the thing open, and it's a pig inside of it. And once you see the pig, she jumps out of nowhere and starts hacking this dude with the meat cleaver in the arm. She ends up cutting his whole right arm off, which is his chainsaw arm, this was smart of her just to keep hacking at him, not just once and run away.
I know you're giving it a thumbs down, but I like it in this scene.
Yeah, go ahead, Mike.
I mean, she's kind of a badass in this scene. Finally, she did something, you know, smart, like fight back a little bit besides just running away with her boobs flopping. I know that was how she was directed to act, and by the way, thank you, but still she's really awesome in this scene, at least. And I think her act, I know we've kind of poked fun here, but I actually think Jessica Biel is really good in this movie as Aaron. Like, I think as far as the acting and the portrayal of the character, I think she does a really great job, and here her acting chops kind of shine through a little bit, because you got to remember, this is 2003. She's really only known at this point for a few small films and Seventh Heaven. So that's a complete flip from that TV show to doing Texas Chainsaw Massacre, where she's wet, soaking wet. You can see, you know, her lady parts and stuff. And so, you know, I mean, to flip that on its head, and she's great in this scene. I love it, man. I think I know what you're about to nitpick, Brian. But, man, I think in this scene is where she wins me back.
Go ahead, Brian.
Man, I agree. She's had great acting. I'm not going to pick apart her acting in this movie, because she did great, because I cannot imagine how it is to just run around and, like, for real try to act petrified. Exactly. And we've seen many, many, many final girls, or just girls, period, in these all these previous horror movies that just, you know, just cringy acting. And that's not the case here. But I will just say, and I think it was a great plan. I think it was a great scene. I think her being in her trying to, you know, fight back, that's great.
Oh, here we go.
Cut him in the neck. Do something. But you got this girl that weighs 110 pounds, maybe, that just, like, took 3 or 4 chops and chopped this dude's arm off. I mean, with a little bitty meat cleaver. I mean, that's to me, I'm just like, oh, come on. But, you know, I mean, I'll give it. It's a horror movie. And, you know, we're talking about it being, like, you know, almost perfect if it didn't have a couple of these things. Right. That's, you know, I'm not trying to nitpick the movie apart, but it's just little things to me that stand out and just like, oh, geez, like typical horror movies do anyway.
Yeah. And after she cuts Leatherface's arm off, she flees outside. And, of course, it's raining outside. Out of nowhere, it starts raining. And she goes into the middle of the road, and she stops the semi. And, you know, the semi pulls over. He's like, what's going on? What's she almost ran you over? So she jumps inside the semi. And, you know, she's freaking out just like the first girl. She's like, you're going the wrong way. Don't go. Don't go. So the semi truck driver ends up stopping at the gas station, the dirty gas station, where the meth girl with the baby's there, Sheriff Hoyt and Luda May. And, you know, the truck driver knocks on the door. She's like, I need some help. I got this crazy girl. And so the sheriff goes outside, and Erin is looking inside at the gas station. She sneaks in, and she steals this baby back from them. And, you know, Luda May, you know, before all that happens, Luda May tells the crazy girl, grab my raincoat or whatever. So they're all outside on the porch. And then she walks back in and sees the baby's gone. And then it shows the sheriff walk. It shows a clip of Erin trying to hotwire a vehicle. And then it shows another scene. Sheriff Hoyt is walking to the semi about to open the driver door. And you think you're made to believe that he's going to see Erin hotwiring the vehicle. But he opens the truck up, and there's nobody there. Then, like, he steps back and looks, you know, to his right or whatever, and you see the sheriff car coming full speed at him. And she runs Sheriff Hoyt over once, and, you know, she takes care of him now. She throws in reverse, runs him over. Then she throws it back in drive and runs over him again, screaming at the top of her lungs. Pretty awesome kill. Then after Erin kills Sheriff Hoyt, you know, she's driving off with the baby. You know, she's looking at the baby. He's just, you know, it's a cute scene between them. It's victorious. And then it shows, you know, all of a sudden Leatherface just hits the car with the chainsaw. It's just another homage to the original.
Right.
Where he, you know, he's in the middle of the road swinging the chainsaw around. Then after you see Leatherface for the last time and they're driving off in the distance, we got more archival footage of, you know, the police officer and the filmer and the director walking through the house. And all of a sudden they're both attacked, and we have more archival commentating saying 2 more police officers were killed on the scene. And that's the end of the movie, guys.
Great narration, by the way.
Great. Awesome, very good narration. What's your guys' thoughts on that last scene real quick before we wrap this up?
For as much crap as I just gave that last scene with her, this was great to me.
She was awesome.
It was great. It was great. She did exactly what anybody, you know, would have done. Ran that dude over multiple times to make sure that he was dead. And, you know, that may be another thing that kind of bothers me so much about the prequel that comes next, is because, you know, at least in this one, you get the satisfaction of, all right, well, that asshole is dead.
Right.
You know that Leatherface is caught, you know, basically with the footage, archival footage. But you know in that prequel, those guys win. You know that, hey, right, they're going to keep going forwards. And I think that's why I've only seen that a couple of times, is because it bothers me, I think, probably just as much as this movie does.
Right. It's really good, though. But on this movie, funny thing, every time I see the truck driver, I don't know if you guys ever watched the show Friday Night Lights, but that's Buddy Garrity. Anyway, for any listener that we have, that's Buddy Garrity, the truck driver. Okay, so anyway, yeah, man, she's great here. And I think this is, again, I love the tip of the cap, if you will, to the original with Leatherface swinging the chainsaw on the road. I thought that was great, especially they did it different. It wasn't just the exact same, and so I thought that was good. I think Jessica Biel is great here. I think taking the baby and running off with it is a nice touch.
Mm-hmm.
That poor damn inbred baby. But no, man, and everyone is equally creepy in this final scene where they're all interacting. The you know, old lady's creepy, meth head girl's creepy, sheriff is creepy, and I like the fact that they didn't, because as we learned from Scream, see, for you people that are listening, you understand the rules of horror. Running over the sheriff twice ain't enough. He could have just as easily got back up, go for one last round. No, that third one, she's like, screw this, getting your ass one last time. And so that I'm a big fan of. But yeah, I love the scene. Love Jessica Biel in this. Again, she redeems herself, her character, Aaron, even though this whole movie could have been avoided if they just would have not taken the girl to the mill house. But, you know, whatever. It's fine. Bravo, Jessica Biel. And again, thank you for the rain scene, director. Sir.
I agree with what you guys. I really like the end of this movie. The only thing I wish it would have shown is like what happened to the truck driver. It kind of leaves like what does Luda May and the meth girl kind of do to after this? I would have liked to have known that. It's not too bad of a nitpick. It's just something I'm curious about, you know.
Right.
Just because, like, how did they react to Sheriff Hoyt being dead? You know what I'm saying?
I'm going to assume he's dead.
Oh, he's definitely dead.
Right.
There's no way he survived all that.
Because Leatherface is still alive, so, you know, what the hell. Right.
I got a few fun facts, I think. I'm just going to read them off real quick. We already went over the first one, The Suicide Girl, how it was filmed and directed. Number two, Andrew Bionarski, whoever, I don't know how you say his last name, the guy who played Leatherface, he actually went up to producer Michael Bay at a Christmas party and personally asked for the role after learning of the remake. And number three is Dolph Lundgren was offered the role of Leatherface.
Yeah, that's what I was. And by the way, Gunnar Hansen and the guy who played Leatherface in this ended up hating each other.
Yep.
Like they got along early on, and then I don't know what riff happened or whatever, but before Gunnar Hansen died, they really, really had it out for each other. When Gunnar Hansen did die, this guy, all he put on his social media was, oh, boo hoo. I'm like, oh, dear God.
Oh, wow.
Leatherface infighting there, I tell you what. So, yeah. But you can keep reading off. Sorry, go ahead.
No, that's only two fun facts I had, really. Brian, you got anything before we.
I have a couple if you don't, Brian.
Yeah, I've got one. I've got one that apparently, and this kind of just solidifies the fact that, you know, these people that review these movies, you know, don't really, I don't agree with anyway, but Robert Ebert actually gave this movie 0 stars and said there was no reason to even waste your time watching this movie, and it became the highest grossing of the entire franchise.
Right. It grossed, I have the number here, $107 million on a $9.5 million budget.
Wow, $9.5 million. Wow.
That's not including promotion, obviously, but $9.5 million budget to make the movie, and it grossed $107 million is quite a profit. So yeah, man.
Wow.
Screw Roger Ebert for that. A couple small facts that they use real meat carcasses.
Yep.
In that meatpacking plant, that's real. So for Jessica Biel to get in there and hide after being a vegan vegetarian, oh, poor thing, man. Supposedly she got done with the scene and went and puked immediately. So. I mean,
oh, wow.
Yeah. What was it against? Eric Balfour, who played Kemper, walked off the set naked when his scenes were done. He stripped off all his clothes and said, here's your stupid ass wardrobe. And he ran out of there naked and jumped in the watering hole. That's a fact. Marilyn Manson was almost a music composer for the whole soundtrack. We went over Aaron was supposed to be pregnant. And by the way, and I meant to bring this up at the very beginning and I forgot, they get away. One different thing in this movie from the original is they get away from the family being cannibals. It's hinted at, it's subtext, it's not in your face, but in this movie, you almost forget that the family are cannibals, and they might not even be cannibals, but it's there in the subtext if you're looking for it. But as far as it being in your face, like the first one where there's no dining room scene, that's another thing. 9 times out of 10, when you have a remake, you remake a classic scene, you try to put your own spin on it. They completely did not do that dining room scene. And that's almost in every other Chainsaw movie. Just about. It's almost in the entire franchise as a dining room scene. And so I thought that was kind of, I actually liked that. I thought it was kind of cool. You don't have to do that scene. Like, make it your own. Again, reboot, not remake. And so, I mean, that's all I have. But, yeah, man, I'll go first since I'm still talking. As far as my rating, I'm going to go 9, like just a solid 9. There's not a lot about this movie that I don't like. And if I want to be entertained, just purely entertained by a horror movie, I'll pop this in before I'll pop the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre in. I like the original one for what it did for the genre. How it's really unsettling and really unnerving. But if I want to be entertained, I'm going to pop this in 10 times out of 10 because that first one just isn't as rewatchable to me. So I give it a 9 overall. I thought the acting was good. The cast is good. The cinematography is good. The music is good. The mood and atmosphere is good. There's a couple nitpicks that we talked about, like Aaron being a dumbass. But again, love the movie. That's all I got.
What's your best and worst kill real quick?
Oh, yeah, let's go over that. So my best kill... Man, that's kind of tough because there's not like, okay, my best kill. Well, if they would have killed old boy on the meat hook, it would have been my best kill. But he got stabbed in the stomach, so that's not a good kill. The best kill, the best Leatherface kill is probably, I can't, man. Probably Morgan.
That's fair.
Right, and then. But the best kill in the movie, it's a suicide in the beginning.
Yeah.
I mean, as far as kill. My least favorite kill, old boy on the meat hook.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, go ahead.
It's just a stab to the gut. I've railed on that in the Scream franchise. I can't switch up my tune now. I'm moving goalposts.
Go ahead, Brian.
So I'm going to give this a 9.5. I think that, you know, as far as a movie goes, as far as a horror movie goes, this movie is almost perfect. I mean, I've nitpicked a lot of little things here and there, but like I said, it unnerved me to the, and if you are a horror movie and you can do that to me, like right. I'm going to give it a 9.5. I think I'm going to reverse those kills. Probably. I very much so disliked, I know I had mic problems earlier and that's kind of why I missed the whole Morgan death scene part. But I really disliked Morgan's death probably the most because it didn't – I mean, if it would have shown him, you know, shown it, you know, going all the way up, you know, chainsawing him all the way up and cutting him in half, like, right. You know, that might have been rated X for, you know, but then it couldn't do it. But
the Terrifier did it with Art the Clown, that movie. I don't know if you've seen that, but
– No, I haven't. But if it would have done that, it would have done better. But I think the fact that it cut apart really – or cut away from it really bothered me. So I actually had that as my worst kill. As the best kill – I actually had, even though it wasn't a Leatherface kill, and you know, apart from the suicide, because I think that, like you said, that's a given that that's the best kill in the whole movie is a suicide. But you know, when Aaron stabs, what's his name? Andy. Hanging, like, to me, that made me cringe so much just because of the, you know, like we said, what idiot stabs him in the stomach?
I think I was right.
It was so cringy to me. Yeah. Like I liked it. The fact that it made me feel, you know, some type of way like that. So that's my thing.
I like how we have our favorite and least reversed.
Yeah, me too.
Choose the taste. No, that's good. That's good.
I would do my best and worst kill first. My best kill, I'm agreeing with Brian, is Andy. Just the totality of it all, the legs cut off.
Right.
He gets his fingernails ripped off as he's trying to, you know, as he's getting pulled into the basement. He gets the salt stuck on his nub. Then he gets slammed on the meat hook. Then, you know, Aaron stabs him in the stomach. Just the totality of it all to me is the best of it. Just because that's the way that I would least like to get killed in this movie.
Oh, you ain't lying.
And my least favorite kill is Pepper. You don't see nothing, really. It's just a chainsaw kill. You don't really see how she even dies, really. And I'm agreeing with Brian again. I'm giving this movie a 9.5. It's entertaining, very entertaining.
Right.
The cinematography is good. R. Lee Ermey makes it a 9.5.
Oh, it's so
he
good.
He is. I'm losing my voice right now. He is awesome as the sheriff. He makes this movie. He is the perfect cast of this movie. He is evil. He is disturbing. He is horrifying. I thought Jessica Biel, she had some dumb parts, but I thought she was a really good final girl. I thought all of the young people were good, honestly, except maybe Pepper. She's kind of annoying.
Yeah.
I thought Andrew Bionarski or whatever, I thought he was a good Leatherface. I thought the kills were good for the most part. You got to give it credit for the suicide shot, just how dedicated they were to getting that shot. And I thought the whole atmosphere of the movie was creepy. I was not bored at all at any scene. Nope. So yeah, that's our review, I guess, guys. We went a little long tonight.
Sorry about that. Yeah, so real quick, this is an Arlie Ermey appreciation podcast officially now. Just thought I'd throw that out there. Yes, right. He's really good in the beginning. If we ever get to review that, we'll take just as long praising him, because he is, in that movie, he is the star. And as Leatherface goes, he's very Jason-esque in this movie, which I think is good for – see, I don't hate Jason. I'm giving him props here. I think him being more Jason-like in this movie than any of the other Chainsaw movies is really good. So that's all I
got to say. Brian, you got any final thoughts real quick?
No, that's it. I've said everything I'd said. I think it's a great movie, like I said. And I'm ready to move on to next week.
That's right. It's crazy that we rated it higher than original Halloween, Nightmare on Elm Street. But just from an entertainment point, rewatchability point, it's better to me. Thanks for tuning in, guys. Episode 6, I think we're going to be doing Child's Play. The introduction to Chucky, so that's going to be a fun one. I know Aaron Cabrera on Twitter asked for it, so that's coming next week. We appreciate you tuning in, guys. And I just want to remind everybody to don't go out there.
Every day in a sidewalk cafe, drinking coffee, watching women walking by, the color of their hair, not the reason that I stare, but I always was a fool.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.